This is the Comedy of the Week from BBC Radio 4. If you'd like to find out more about any of our comedy shows, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. But first, here's this week's comedy.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Welcome to Just a Minute. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but around the world, but also to welcome to the programme four exciting, dynamic performers, and they are seated on my right, Paul Merton and Alan Cochrane, and seated on my left, Jonathan Ross and Lisa Tarbuck. Please welcome all four of them. It's Trudy Stevens, who's going to help me with the score, and she will blow the whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And, Paul, let's begin with you. Oh, here's a good subject. Why I hate roller coasters. Paul, tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
I hate roller coasters because of the physical experience. The combination of speed and height is rather terrifying. When I can admire them as aesthetic pieces of beauty, the up and down, rolling around nature of the roller coaster can be very attractive, especially if you're standing on the ground, peering up at it from a great height. I've said height three times.
Jonathan, you challenge.
Well, he did say height quite a lot. And also, you can't peer up on a roller coaster from a great height, can you?
I mean,
you
could, I thought I was on the ground peering up.
If you're on the ground, you can peer up.
But you're not peering up from a great height, you're peering up from no height whatsoever.
Oh, you're going to be you're going to be difficult, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm pedantic, yes.
Yeah, yes, right.
Your pedantry has been noticed.
I feel I stepped in too quickly.
No. It was a correct challenge. Yeah. And you have 41 seconds still available. You tell us something about why I hate roller coasters, starting now.
I wish I could, but I love them. Is that a...
Why are you challenged?
Deviation.
Absolutely correct, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's why I hate roller coasters, and you said you love them.
But, Nicholas, I can't sit here and lie.
I think within the rules of Just a Minute, I have to be fair to Alan and say, yes, it's why I hate roller coasters, and you said you love them.
I'm not disputing.
Right, OK. So, Alan, a point to you for a correct challenge, and you have 38 seconds. Why I hate roller coasters, starting now.
I hate roller coasters because people continually compare them to life. Oh, it's like a roller coaster. How? Because it's full of ups and downs, or because it's tedious and you're standing there waiting to possibly die? Is that really what a life is like, or even a roller coaster?
Paul Chandler.
There was a bit of a hesitation there.
Yes, there was, right. So, Paul, you have the subject back again. You have 20 seconds available. Why I hate roller coasters, starting now.
I was recently staying at a hotel in Blackpool, and round the back was this massive roller coaster, and I was trying to get to sleep in the afternoon. Not only was it situated at the rear of the place I was staying in, but also it came in through the window.
Lisa, you challenged.
Well, there was a little hesitation over place.
Yes, and we're going to hear from all of you on this first round.
Wow.
So, Lisa, with a point to you, and you've got him with 10 seconds to go. Why I hate roller coasters, starting now.
If you've ever been on a roller coaster with my brother, you'll understand completely why I hate roller coasters, because he sits on one side of the booth and pushes you out as you get to the top bit and makes you...
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Lisa Tarbuck, and so she's got 2 points in the round. They've all got one. It's even. Alan, we'd like you to begin the next round. And the subject now is assessing the strength of a chili. Well, the audience seem to enjoy it, but you tell us something about the subject. 60 seconds starting now.
Assessing the strength of a chili can be done many ways. Most people favour a little nibble from the end of said vegetable or spice. I prefer the suppository technique. I feel that there's absolutely no doubt that you've got a fiery one then. And let's face it, all roads lead to Rome.
So, Paul, you challenge first.
So hesitation.
Yeah, we call that hesitation. Paul, there are 42 seconds available. Assessing the strength of a chili, starting now.
Indian arm wrestling is a very good way to establish the strength of a chili. It may look powerful, but what actually is it like underneath its skin? Red, sure, but does that redness go all the way through to its heart? Does it have the courage of a lion, a panther locked in raspberry jam? No, nobody does. A chili can be judged to be extremely strong if you see that its hue is as...
Lisa, you challenge
me. I'm not sure that I know what you're talking about.
I've no idea. I stopped listening in 1968.
I don't know what he's talking about either. So the strength for the chili is
deviation,
down to...
right? Oh.
So Lisa, you've got in with another point and the subject, and there are 19 seconds available. Assessing the strength of a chili, starting now.
I think it's always interesting when you are chopping chilies that you can assess them afterwards when you mistakenly just scratch your eye or go to the loo and wipe your bum. Stuck for quite a tingly moment, thinking I might have put a few too many in that chili. I'm not quite.
Paul Challenge.
This can't be the only way of assessing the strength of chili. This programme's all heard all around the world. Culinary tips are noted down.
Paul, I think we could say she was giving you one way of assessing the strength of a chili.
Yeah.
It's her particular way. Yeah. It doesn't matter. There may be other ways.
There may be other ways. So, we haven't heard about them, but there may be others.
Well, Alan's given us one or two.
Well, they've been the same as her. Shove it up anyway. Just thought taste buds should be a first option. Especially if you've got guests around, you know.
Oh, I'm almost tempted to give you a bonus point for all that. Lisa, an incorrect challenge.
Oh, OK. So,
no, because that was your opinion.
Yeah.
4 seconds are still available. Assessing the strength of a chilli is starting now.
When my dog ate a chilli once, all I can tell you is that...
So Lisa Tarbuck was again speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point and others in the round, and she has increased her lead at the end of the round. And Jonathan will be with you to begin. So this is something I think you might know a little bit about. The subject is interview techniques.
Okay.
And you have 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
By interview technique, I imagine you mean adults talking to each other in front of a crowd for their delight or entertainment, or indeed to winkle out some hitherto unknown fact about the subject or indeed victim. It's not something I believe you are born with. I think you can learn by studying the masters. Like, for example, Sir Michael Parkinson, who would introduce the guest and then make them sit down and feel comfortable using that warm, avuncular Barnsley voice of his, and then, wham, hit them in the side of the face with a killer question. It was the classic iron hand in the velvet glove. Then, of course, you have Piers Morgan, the root of all evil. and another route towards interviewing.
Alan, you challenged.
Well, I think there was root and root.
Yeah, but two different words. Root with a U, root with a double O.
But you pronounce them both the same, root, root. But I tell you what,
totally
Jonathan,
disappointed
as you haven't played the game before... No, I'm going to be very generous here. As you haven't played the game before, I'm going to say to you, right, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Okay. You have 24 seconds still. Tell us more about interview techniques starting now.
Piers Morgan, who bangs away...
to my own track!
Paul, do challenge first.
Any mention of Piers Morgan is probably... probably too much, but that was repetitious.
It was repetition.
Yes.
Lisa, you challenged as well.
Yes,
right.
Again.
Yeah, going to mention. So that's a correct challenge. And 22 seconds are still available, Paul. Interview techniques starting now.
When I worked on Room 10 Ditto, I remember thinking to myself that one of the reasons behind getting the guests on the show was to interview them about their life and their dislikes. And the technique that I would use when talking to these celebrity guests was to listen carefully to their answers and then select a question, which would be a follow-up just on based on what they'd said, perhaps.
So Paul Martin then speaking as the whistle away and gained that extra point. He's moved forward, he's one behind our leader, Lisa Tarbuck, and then Jonathan Ross and Alan Cochrane in that order. And Lisa, we're with you to begin, and the subject is what I keep in my pockets. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Well, what's interesting is that I'm wearing an all-in-one leather jumpsuit, and consequently, the pockets are quite tight, and I can only keep a credit card on me this evening. But as a rule, I like to keep several things in my pocket, including a couple of pellets of chewing gum, a few dog bags, because I think they're very useful items for holding anything from conkers to water. And in the olden days, when you used to have a pig in a poke, it comes from the need for women women to have button-on pockets that were cause célèbres within the family, perhaps embroidered by the aunties, uncles and grandparents. And sometimes, if there was... It was the quite interesting, was wasn't it? All true. No. Except for the leather all-in-one. Well,
you went for 41 seconds.
Oh.
But, Jonathan, you challenged first. And you've got him with 19 seconds to go. What I keep in my pockets, starting now.
What don't I keep in my pockets might be a better question. They're like the tar.
What did I do?
You've done the same thing as you did at the beginning.
What did I do?
Well, the first subject was why I hate roller coasters. And you said why I love roller coasters.
Well, I know, I just said I was going to talk about what I keep in them. No. I was just getting there in a roundabout way.
I know what you were doing, but it's not a clever way to do it in just a minute.
You know what?
Because they're just waiting to pounce, you see.
Can I leave and come back another week with some preparation under my belt?
I did pounce, but more because I thought he was going to talk about what he doesn't keep in his pockets, which is deviation.
That's how he began, what I don't keep in my pockets. Listen, I gave you the benefit of the doubt last time,
you
Jonathan.
Did.
I don't
kind.
Think I can do it twice.
No,
so,
can't.
Alan, a correct challenge to you. 16 seconds. What I keep in my pockets, starting now.
What I keep in my pockets usually lives in a shirt pocket on my left chest until recently when I boarded a roller coaster and it all tipped out on the loop-de-circle that I went on. And I don't really carry a lot whilst performing as a stand-up comic, but just...
Cochrane was then speaking as a whistle. When gained the extra point, he's moved up. He's equal with Jonathan Ross in third place, behind 1 point behind Paul, 2 points behind Lisa Tarbuck, who's in the lead. And Alan Cochrane, it's your turn to begin. The subject is blue suede shoes. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Blue suede shoes was a hit for the artist Elvis Presley, but were also a terrible choice for when he and I went fell running in the Lake District. He kept slipping and I had to say, "Are you OK?" And he would reply, "Uh-huh." And I really enjoyed our day together. It was also a song done by Eddie Cochran, my great uncle, who for some reason spelled his surname different from mine. He seemed keen to not bother with the E, whereas I go for C-O and then the letter at the start again, H-R-A-N, and then I do use the fifth letter of the alphabet to close out.
Poor challenge.
We may have drifted slightly from blue suede shoes.
I think we have. We've gone on to your name and your ancestry.
Well,
and your...
We're actually discussing my uncle, Eddie Cochran, who sang blue suede shoes, so I thought it was in keeping with the subject on the card, but...
Wasn't it Carl Perkins that did blue suede shoes?
I think he might have wrote it, but, but my uncle never mentioned that.
No.
You did start off that way, but you got well away from blue suede shoes after a bit talking about your ancestry. No wonder once you got onto your ancestors, you got carried away.
I do miss my uncle.
Yeah. How old were you again when he died?
Oh, it's too painful
too
to
painful,
remember.
Yes.
Uncle Eddie, we called him.
Uncle Eddie, yeah.
So, Paul, you've got in with a point, of course, and 23 seconds on blue suede shoes starting now.
It was very much part of the wardrobe of the Teddy Boy, a movement that came to prominence in the 1950s with their quiffed back hair and Edwardian-style clothes. Blue suede shoes. The crepes were thick, the laces were long and silky, and the actual material that the shoe was made of, the suede, although it could be blue, there were many other colours. We think of red, yellow, but blue...
So Paul Merton speaking as the whistle went, gained another point, and he's now just ahead of Lisa Tarbuck in that order, followed by Jonathan Ross and Alan Cochrane equally in third place. Jonathan, we're back with you to begin. And the subject we've thought of for you now is smoke and mirrors.
OK.
Are you ready?
I won't start by saying I don't know anything about it. I've learned that much.
Yes. Okay. So our 60 seconds, if you need it, starting now.
Smoke and mirrors is commonly held as a phrase to refer to magic tricks, to the act of conjuration, to illusions. When a magician or another professional shows an audience something and promises to complete a task impossible in their eyes and then seems to have done that very thing and then reveals that nothing of the sort occurred. word. In show business, that seems to be okay. In real life, not so much. Case in point, my wife last night, when I told her before bed I had indeed taken the bins out, this morning when she discovered I had been too lazy, she wasn't thrilled, as she would have been if I'd have been a professional. Even if I'd have stood in front and said, hey presto, alakazam, the sight of those particular receptacles...
Very good. You went for 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh. And for a first-time player, that is amazing. Paul, what was your challenge?
Well, it was hesitation, but as a word of advice, Jonathan, you can slow down.
Yes, you're giving yourself...
I was just very excited. Oh, no. Breathe.
Right. So, what is the challenge?
I was going to say hesitation.
Well, I think that the pace he was going, that wasn't hesitation.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Right.
He was going very fast, yes.
We will. So we give you the benefit of the doubt, Jonathan. And generosity from Paul. And take Paul's advice, please. And you've got a point, of course.
Slowing
and 20
down.
Seconds are still available. Smoke and mirrors starting now.
Smoke and mirrors can mean something very different. What? What happened?
You're taking the piss now. Do normal.
That's my telephone voice, I'll have you know.
Listen, to be fair to Paul, give Paul a bonus point for that interruption. We loved it. But you get a point for being interrupted.
Okay.
And you still have 16 seconds. And try and find a normal pace, will you?
I'm so self-conscious now, I don't even know how I speak.
No, no. Well, just do it naturally. Right, smoke and mirrors, Jonathan, starting now.
Smoke and mirrors can mean other things. When I was growing up in East London, S and M referred to something altogether very different, by which I mean we used to, as a hobby, try and learn to inhale tobacco like the ill-informed adults did round the back of the school near the bike shed. And there was a shiny, reflective...
So Jonathan Ross, again speaking as the whistle went, and got the extra point for speaking at that moment, and has moved forward, and he's in second place, one ahead of Lisa Tarbuck, and two or three ahead of Alan Cochrane. And Lisa, it's your turn to begin, and the subject now, chillaxing. Tell us something about... There's nothing funny in that. It's a word, one word, that a lot of youngsters use these days. So, chillaxing, Lisa, 60 seconds, starting now.
Thanks very much. I'll take that subject off. You tap slapping me. Slapping. Oh, I was trying to learn some patois.
Who from? Like a Chelsea pensioner?
Perhaps.
So, Jonathan, you got in there first. Chillax a little. And then talk about
it.
Chillaxing, starting now.
Chillaxing is a favourite phrase of the young, who are ill-informed about the proper way to speak, of course. Lol, ruffle, copter, so...
Whole challenge.
You ever remember just of ruffle or something?
Well, it was a whole different word. Ruffle copter is a whole different word. It's the copter that you fly to a ruffle in.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the explanation.
That's because you're not down with a kit. Blam!
Yeah.
You don't know that tap, tap, tap.
Slap me, B.
Right. Well, I don't know how to judge on this one. Because
I wouldn't understand it if you did.
I know.
Have I become the voice of youth on this?
So, Alan, help me. Was his challenge correct or not?
I don't know for sure, but I think maybe not.
So, Jonathan, an incorrect challenge. You have a point for that. You have 47 seconds. You continue on chillaxing, starting now.
I wonder if these words are designed by the young merely to confuse those...
Paul challenge.
A repetition of by the young.
Yeah, yes, you did mention the young before.
I have nothing to say back. You're right.
Yes. Do you want me to vote on that challenge, or are we just... are you happy with that?
No, Alan, I may look old, but I can cope with that. Paul, the correct challenge. You have 43 seconds still available. Chillaxing starting now.
Chopping wood in winter is tremendously good exercise for the heart and generally for the system. You take your axe down to the forest once the temperature has reached a certain degree and you start swinging against the tree. The wood will fall underneath the weight of your blade, and perhaps if you are feeling a little bit cold at this point, you could just wrap yourself up with a nice bit of sheep wool that you've cut from a passing animal and draped strapped across your shoulder. Chillaxing, for those of you slightly slower than the rest of us, is a combination of relaxing at night time with your teenage friends, discussing old reruns of Three Men and a Boat starring Griff Rhys-Jones, and wondering whatever happened to Mr. Pastry reruns.
Was again speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. And he's increased his lead at the end of that round, ahead of Jonathan Ross, who's in second place, then Lisa Tarbuck, and then Alan Cochrane in that order. And Paul, we're back with you to begin. And the subject is, oh, an interesting one, my small role in the history of Lawrence of Arabia. I don't write it down, it's a long subject. I'll give you a moment to think about it. My small role in the history of Lawrence of Arabia. 60 seconds starting now.
Well, I went to see the film when it was re-released in the mid-1960s, and my five bob probably contributed a small amount to the budget. Several thousand grains of sand, I imagine. But without my contribution and other members of the audience throughout the world, it would have been called Lawrence of Arabia in a car park. So we paid to see this historical drama unfold upon the screen. We knew that David Lean, the director, had directed many films before. Jonathan will remember them as well as I. I won't go through the list now because it would be slight deviation, because we're concentrating on his opus, Lawrence of Arabia. Noel Coward, upon seeing Peter O'Toole in the role.
Jonathan, you're challenging.
He's just a bit too plummy for my taste right now. I'm sorry. It just isn't you, Paul. I'm sorry.
So what's your challenge within the rules?
It's not really a challenge. I'm just a little bit disappointed.
Disappointed about what?
He's such a normally such a straight talking kind of guy. When he gets all plummy and waving his arm,
this
in
is
the air
Radio
and talking
4.
About...
We enjoyed your interruption, so we give you a bonus point for that. But Paul was interrupted, so he gets a point for that. Keeps the subject. 22 seconds. My small role in the history of Lawrence of Arabia. Starting now.
More like Florence of Arabia, said the erstwhile playwright of the 1920s. That's the trouble with anecdotes when it's split in the middle.
Lisa challenge.
Repetition of 19 from 1960.
You do the
19. Yes.
So Lisa Tarbuck was listening well. Correct challenge. 16 seconds are available. Lisa, do you tell us something about my small role in the history of Lawrence of Arabia, starting now?
I went to see a documentary about the history of Lawrence of Arabia, and I decided...
Alan, challenge.
She's just speaking a bit too plummy for my life.
Yes, it's annoying, isn't it?
Alan, we enjoyed your interruption. Give him a bonus point for that. Lisa, you were interrupted, and you have the subject still. And 12 seconds, my small role in the history of Lawrence of Arabia, starting now.
So I went and got myself a soft bap, and inside it I put some egg mayonnaise. And I thought, I'll take that in.
Jonathan, challenge.
Surely a deviation. No. I've seen that movie many times. There are no bats.
She's got an answer. She's got an answer.
Yeah, root and root.
Yes.
Roll.
Oh. Yeah, but what's it got to do with the history of Lawrence of Arabia?
I'm taking an egg mayonnaise roll, so I really thoroughly enjoy the documentary. Yeah. I'm hungry.
So you went to see a documentary about Lawrence of Arabia, you think, well, that'd be a bit sandy. I need something to eat. So she took along an egg back.
I need something moist to eat.
She wanted something moist to eat.
Lisa, they're all justifying the fact that you had this small roll and you're hungry. But we'll give you the benefit of the doubt and say, you keep the subject, 6 seconds, my small role in the history of Lawrence of Arabia, starting now.
I cannot tell you how delicious it was to watch that man and his beautiful blue eyes move across the screen on a camel.
So, Lisa Tarbuck gained that extra point for speaking as the whistle went, has moved forward. She's equal with Jonathan Ross in second place. And they're just ahead of Alan Cochrane. But they're both a little few points behind Paul Merton, who's still in the lead. And we're moving into the final round.
Oh, the quickening.
Well, I thought we'd get more than that, actually. Anyway, the final round. And... Oh, you are lovely.
You're taking the piss.
That guy there is too plummy for me.
Alan Cochrane, it's your turn to begin. And the subject we've got now is... doing a good turn. Tell us something about that in this game, starting now.
Doing a good turn is something I found very difficult during my years at ballet school. I often would spin and land flat on my face, and actually I eventually decided to leave and become a Samaritan because I thought that would be a better place to do a good turn. And in fact, it is. When people phone up, they can sound often very, very upset.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't even a subtle repetition, that one. Right next to each other, weren't they?
Yeah. Paul, your challenge, please.
Repetition or very, yes.
A very, yes. Paul, the subject is doing a good turn. There are 37 seconds available, starting now.
I sometimes dream of impersonating Max Miller, getting on his colourful floral costume with a funny hat and walking out into an audience and saying, I went home the other night, the wife says to me, here, I hear the milkman's made love to every woman in this street bar one. And she said, I bet that stuck-up cow at number 54.
As I glide down the Thames and looking at Blackfriars Bridge, I notice the silhouette of London grasping itself towards me. A boatman with a sad look in his eye swims towards my vessel. I search my pocket for doubloons, but I realise I have none. And as I push his head beneath the turbulent tide, I suddenly...
Well, Jonathan, you've challenged.
He's drunk. Are you drunk? Is that allowed? Is it okay to be drunk?
What I forgot what the subject was. Doing a good turn. It definitely wasn't that, was it?
My challenge was, I thought he was drunk.
I think we can say the subject is doing a good turn.
Yeah.
I don't think we've established that he was doing any bloody turns at all.
Not at all.
So, Jonathan, you've got a point for a correct challenge. Yeah. Brace yourself. You have 1 second to go.
I'm not going to start with the words, I don't. Okay?
And you start now. For the challenge.
Deviation. He didn't start with the words, I don't.
A lovely challenge, but it was an incorrect challenge. So you haven't spoken, but you've got another point.
Thank you.
You have a third of a second to say, doing a good turn, starting now.
Every good turn...
Jonathan Ross beats it to whistle away and gain the extra point. And the final situation is Alan Cochrane, who gives such great value, but he finished in fourth place. Lisa Tarbuck, who was in the lead for a time, she was a point or two behind Jonathan Ross, our first-time player of the game, and he was only 1 point behind our leader, Paul Merton. So, Paul, we do say you are the winner this week. So, it only remains for me to say... Thank you to these four fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Alan Cochrane, Jonathan Ross and Lisa Tarbuck. I thank Trudy Stevens, who's helped me with the score and blown her whistle so delicately when the 60 seconds elapsed. We thank Katie Tyrrell, our producer. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we're grateful to this lovely audience here who've cheered us on our way magnificently. From them, from me, Nicholas Parsons, tune in again at the same time when we play Just a Minute!
That was the Comedy of the Week from BBC Radio 4. You can hear more comedy at 11.30, 6.30 and 11 p.m. every weekday on Radio 4 or any time you like through the BBC iPlayer. For more information, please go to bbc.co.uk/radio4. Ha, 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 ha.